This KABU program has been made possible in part by KABU Foundation members and a grant from Teamsters Local 206, helping Oregon's working families fight for good jobs and a better future. For information about how the Teamsters can help you win respect at work, the number is 503-251-2344. And also by Ask Me Local 88, protecting worker rights and fighting to improve the wages and working conditions of members who work for Multnomah County, Central City Concern,
with Senator Bob Kerry from Nebraska, and was responsible for staffing his work on Medicare, Medicaid, public health, welfare, and social issues. She is a graduate with a BA in political science from Whitman College in Walla Walla, Washington, and earned her MPA from the Maxwell School of Citizenship and Public Affairs at Syracuse University. Karen, it's our pleasure to welcome you. So, gee, as much as I'd love to talk about the Medicare Modernization Act with you, we could have much fun doing that. Maybe you could set the stage for us a little bit and talk about the recent polling that the Center for American Progress and Americans for Healthcare conducted, and what kind of trends you all are seeing, and what you all thought of that information.
Oh, I'd be happy to. As you mentioned, we fielded a poll late last year around public attitudes on healthcare, and particularly on providing affordable health coverage to all Americans, in partnership with Americans for Healthcare, which is a program of the SEIU, the Service Employees International Union. We were fascinated and thrilled by the results, which showed that the public has an enormous demand for and desire for real systemic change in our healthcare system, that people see healthcare as the number one healthcare costs, and the lack of healthcare coverage is the number one economic threat facing our nation, and by a 2-to-1 margin see it as the most important economic issue for their family. I would also say we specifically asked about economic issues rather so that, you know, national security things weren't mixed in there. But the way that healthcare popped is a really big issue, I think, speaks to people's experience in the last, you know, 10 to 15 years with premiums rising 5 times faster than wages, with fewer employers offering health coverage, and with workers, when they are offered health care coverage, needing to pay a larger portion both in cost sharing and in premiums. I really want to portray this poll as exciting news and a great opportunity for progressives, though, because what we see is strong and broad and deep support for providing affordable health coverage for all Americans. And people who feel that the White House and the Republicans in charge of Congress in particular have been neglecting this issue to the extent that they have favored the drug industry and the insurance industry, but have left American families with the bill. So we see this as a great opportunity to bring this issue back full force onto the national agenda, and also as something that progressives in particular can really use to their advantage across a range of demographic and income groups.
That was one of the things that I found very interesting. I think traditionally we would think, oh yeah, you know, Democrats feel very strongly about health care in a partisan sense in terms of electoral votes. Mm-hmm. But it was very interesting to see the strength amongst Republicans for wanting some real change in our health care system.
Right. And I think that really just speaks to how people are experiencing our health care system and the rising costs that are part of it, and the fact that we pay twice as much per person as any other industrialized wealthy nation, and yet we have 46 million Americans who are uninsured and millions more who are really worried about, you know, what happens to them if they lose their job or if their employer coverage changes. So it's a concern that is really broadly held among the American people, and it is, I think, that the people are really looking for leaders to seize on this issue and to do something about it.
So part of the issue here is the politicians haven't had that forced on them for the attention that it deserves.
That's right.
Well, I might mention something Funny, haha. So I actually work for a healthcare advocacy organization, and during the legislative session, you know, did all this work trying to move some stuff on the state level. And by and large, a lot of things got stymied in the House. But the ironic thing about this was after the legislative session, all the House and Senate leaders on both sides of the political aisle were like, suddenly had this epiphany, oh, we didn't do anything about health care, right? And are now trying to figure out precisely what to do about that. So maybe they've seen your poll.
Yeah, here in Oregon, too, we've had 2 years of recovery. Supposedly the economy is recovering, and, you know, tens of thousands of so-called jobs have been created. However, if you look at it, at the same time, there's more uninsured than there was 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. So most of the jobs that have been created are in the service sector. They may offer the employee some kind of insurance. If there's family coverage offered, they can't afford to take it on a $9 an hour wage.
Right.
So that's where we're at right now in the economy. So,
have you noticed any interesting ideas coming out? Maybe you want to talk a little bit about what the Center for American Progress's platform would be with these results of the poll, and what do you think progressives should do about reforming the healthcare system?
Well, I could, you know, talk about the healthcare plan that the center has put out earlier this year, but where I think progressives really need to be headed is to understand what issues are most important to the voters around this whole topic, and to communicate with them about what they would do to change the healthcare system, not so much on the specifics of, you know, we would cover, you know, people to 200% of poverty or, you know, those kind of specifics, but more to say, you know, that they will first make this their top priority issue, that this is going to be their signature thing, but most importantly, to articulate what their principles are, what they mean by reforming the healthcare system. And what our polling data shows that is important to the public is that there's really four principles. And one is providing affordable coverage for all Americans. Another is to ensure that people have a choice of doctors and, to some degree, also health plans. A third and a really important one is to control costs. And a fourth, which is actually related to controlling costs, is to make prevention a national priority. One of the things that really popped out in our survey that I found so interesting was that people see, they know that a greater investment in preventive care can save money in the long run, and really believe that that needs to be a bigger part of our healthcare system in a very meaningful and muscular way. And they see that as important to them in maintaining their health and wellness, but also as a way to control costs within the system. And that's something that, for example, the president's most recent proposals on healthcare and health savings accounts, you really scrimps on that. You know, we know that high cost sharing with things like high deductible plans reduces necessary care, and particularly preventive care, for people for whom, you know, where they spend their dollars is an important issue in their family budget. That, we need to make prevention, and we need to make prevention a national priority with the public. And I think that's one of the areas where the president's proposals really fall short.
The other thing, just on the HSAs, well, first of all, can we just say, you know, all this lead up to the State of the Union that the president was going to talk about health care and, you know, release some big new plan, right? And it was the same old, and he spoke for less than a minute on the number one domestic issue for Americans. It was kind of outrageous. But the other thing around HSAs broadly and this whole consumer-driven health care model is we can't be smart consumers when we don't have a clue what things are costing. And I'm wondering if there was any data that you've seen, whether it was in this most recent poll or in other research that you may have seen or been involved in, that talk about whether it's consumer-driven healthcare or how do we get to cost, quality, and transparency in this very closed industry.
We didn't directly address that in the poll. You know, what I can say are a couple of things about you know, both the satisfaction that people have who are in consumer-driven healthcare right now, but I think also, you know, what it means for the healthcare system as a whole. We know that only about a third of the people who are in consumer-driven health plans are satisfied with the coverage that they have and with their experience of being in those kind of plans. We also know that there was a recent General Accounting Office study that looked at the Federal Employees Health Benefit Program, which has just started offering those kind of plans with a health savings account attached. And one of the things that they showed in the plans that were offered is that none of them gave people information on costs of services, and of the, I think it was two plans out of five plans, provided them any information on quality, but that was extremely general, and, you know, was of very little use to people in helping make their healthcare decisions. And I find it, you know, striking that the program that the federal government runs is unable at this point to get its plans to provide that kind of information to consumers to make those kind of decisions that they need. But, you know, to kind of keep ranting on this for a second.
Rant away, Karen.
One of the things that I think is, you know, particularly troubling about this idea of consumer-driven healthcare, there's obviously the transparency and the being a good consumer that you referred to, but there's also just that this isn't going to address our biggest problems, one being healthcare costs. And when you have a program that's developed to, you know, try to control healthcare costs by using high deductibles, and yet 10% of the people in this country account for 70% of all healthcare spending, those are the people who, you know, a high deductible is just a drop in the bucket of their healthcare needs. And the CEO of Kaiser Permanente, I guess it was sometime last year, said, you know, the difference between a high with that deductible can be, you know, sort of 4 hours in a hospital versus 5 hours in a hospital. And that doesn't seem like, you know, anything to get too exercised about when you're making your choices as mm-hmm. a consumer. So it's really the ability to control the healthcare costs in the system when you're ignoring 70% of the costs is one problem. And then another is that there are a number of studies out there that show that HSAs are likely to actually increase the number of people without health insurance because of the dynamics that they get started in the healthcare market. So it doesn't help on coverage, and it won't help on costs.
So, like, oh, I don't know, negotiating the lowest prices for pharmaceuticals, that might be one way
right.
that we might be able to reduce costs.
I mean, I think, you know, we know that when you have group purchasing and bulk negotiating power, that's how we get better cost controls in healthcare, whether it's through a public program or whether it's through private insurance. It's when you have some muscle in the marketplace that you're able to negotiate prices well.
Exactly. So do you think, I mean, I'm always curious about this whole issue around the lack of employer-based coverage and how, you know, it's now down to 60%, maybe 59% of employers in this country offer health insurance. Do you think it's mostly a cost problem in that, or are businesses trying to take the Walmart way and making a business decision that we're just not going to do it for the bottom line?
Well, I mean, I think those are one and the same problem, because with healthcare costs and healthcare premiums increasing so much, it does become a bottom line problem for mm-hmm. businesses. But, you know, what we also know about health insurance and other benefits is that it helps businesses keep their skilled and trained workers. So, you know, there is a good business reason to provide health insurance also. I think that the increases in premiums have made employers a little, you know, more risk averse and wary also. I mean, when you can't predict with any certainty what you will pay next year,
mm-hmm.
You know, it makes you more nervous about offering coverage as well. So I think that getting a better handle on cost increases and providing some, and, you know, creating some more predictability would certainly help employers out.
Have you seen more employers show a willingness around the country to want to do something about the healthcare system in a political way, you know, in a system change rather than what they're having to do is negotiate with carriers all the time to try to decrease their costs?
Well, we are working on that, I guess is the best way to put it. And I feel very optimistic that business is going to engage in this issue. They're clearly a key stakeholder for doing anything to really fix our healthcare system. And we are in a, you know, below the radar screen kind of way doing a lot of outreach to individual corporations and businesses that have expressed interest and concern and interest in engaging in these issues to see, you know, where do we have common ground and how can we engage them best. And there certainly is a lot of interest and concern. I think we're a ways away from having a real movement from the business sector yet, but, you know, hopefully we'll get there.
Encouraging words coming out of GM anyway.
Yes. you know, while at the other, on the other side, they're, you know, looking at their retiree benefits and, you know, making some important change, some big changes there that are going to hurt their retirees. But it's, you know, it's a very real thing, and it hurts our international competitiveness, how much we pay for health care, you know, compared to other countries is an issue for our corporations and for the people who work for them and, you know, the economy that they're part of keeping healthy and keeping driving. So it's, you know, really about how strong are we as a country is related to how well do we take care of everybody.
I want to go back to a question about your poll, because you mentioned that it showed a pop pretty high in the poll, not only the number of people that are concerned about the health care they have and the higher premiums, but folks that are concerned about losing coverage. So that's popped up very high, that's a huge issue for folks?
Well, I think, you know, people really see that they need a level of economic security that health coverage provides them. You know, without health coverage, they're at such risk for extraordinary costs that they can't cope with, you know, in case of an accident or an emergency or, you know, disease.
Or a pink slip.
Right, right. And that, you know, the other things that they need to save for and work towards, too, like buying a house or their children's education or saving for retirement, that those priorities are threatened if they, you know, if they lose their health care coverage and then something happens to them or one of their family members. So I think people, understand very well how important health coverage is as one of the legs of their, you know, family's economic security. And so they're scared about whether they will, lose it.
Do you have any comparative data that you might have heard about or read about from the early 80s when the Clintons were talking about health care reform? Do you know what polling looked like then? Or?
You know, I can't quote with absolute certainty, but I can say that the polling firm that did this work with us, when we got the results back that showed that 84% of the public supported fundamentally reforming our healthcare system and providing coverage for all Americans, they were startled at how strong that was and told me that the numbers that they were used to seeing going back to the late 80s and early 90s were more in the low 70s, and that they felt the uptick in that was really about some of the dynamics that are going on in our healthcare system and the experiences that people have had since the last time we really engaged in this issue in 1993 and 1994. Mm-hmm. You know, if you look back at the Clinton healthcare plan, and, you know, I wish I had the numbers right in front of me, but we would have had virtually everybody in this country with health care coverage, and health care costs would have been lower if all of the projections.
We were making the point before the show that it's amazing when you look back, too, on those Clinton years in the early 90s. That was one of the only times when businesses saw small, sometimes almost tiny increases in their health insurance because they were responding to the political pressure at the time.
Right.
So.
That's right.
You know, 84%, we're a ballot measure state. It makes me want to jump up and put a ballot measure.
Of course, there's likely to be six health-related ballot measures, and actually our next guest is Tom Chamberlain, who's the president of the AFL-CIO, and they're putting on a fair share health care ballot measure as well as a Health Insurance Accountability Act. So keep your eyes on Oregon, Karen, and we're really happy to have had you join us for this time. Appreciate it very much, and hopefully you weren't snowbound today.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you very much.
Okay, good night.
Have a good evening. Good
Thanks.
Night.
Is Tom there?
Tom is here.
Tom Chamberlain, my brother.
Tom is in the building, Brother Ken.
You're in the building? Wait.
Welcome to the show. As you've been listening, we're talking all about healthcare tonight. And, you know, I firmly believe for all of us in the labor movement, the progressive movement, this is the number one issue in front of us. And if we don't address it soon, we're going to see things further deteriorate. So we wanted to talk to you a little bit about what's going on here in Oregon.
Sure.
Well, before we do that, do we need to say this is KBOO in Portland?
Great, 90.7 FM, thank you. So, Tom, you know, as the director of AFSCME, I would say at least for the last 8 to 10 years, healthcare bargaining in our bargaining units is the number one issue that we have to deal with. And I'm just wondering what you've seen in other unions around the state and some of the private sector unions that you've dealt with in the last few months since you became president.
Well, what you have in Oregon is, first of all, you have 600,000-plus Oregonians without health care. And put that in perspective, that would be almost every man, woman, and child in Multnomah County without health care. That's just phenomenal. And when you have that number of folks without health care, it has an impact. And couple that with the rising cost of health care, it is the number one issue in every collective bargaining negotiations in the state.
600,000, that's frightening.
It is frightening. I mean, we have a state of, 3.2 million?
Well, and if you think about it, too, it's that, you know, everyone 65 and older has health insurance through Medicare.
That's right.
So, you know, we may think of it as the largest city in the state, which I tend to make that geographic connection, but also that, you know, it's 17% of our population if we include all 3.5 million individuals, but take out those Oregonians 65 and older, and it's even closer to a quarter of the population without health insurance.
Actually, Mary Beth, that's a number I've heard, is 1 in 4 Oregonians not have health care.
And that's on the rise over the last couple of years, even though so-called economy has created a lot of jobs.
Yeah, but they tend to be low-paying jobs in the service sector, without health benefits, $9,000 less than the jobs they've replaced. That's a fact that's come out of the Bush legacy.
Wow, gee, and that's not even enough to pay for the health care costs, which are now averaging almost $11,000 for a family premium. So tell us, what is the Oregon AFL-CIO going to do to try to rectify this problem?
Well, one, we need to make sure that employers are paying their fair share, and that's why we have submitted as an initiative the Fair Share Health Care Initiative, which would require employers over 4,500 employees to pay at least 9% of their payroll for health benefits. And that would impact, that would pertain to the 12 largest employers in the state. Now, this isn't to penalize anyone, but what we're talking about here is fair competition. When you have the grocery industry, where we have good players like Albertsons, Fred Meyer's, and Safeway, who are paying on average 9.9% of their payroll to give good benefits to their employees, and Walmart, for an example, that doesn't provide health care to their employees, that gives them an unfair advantage, not even getting into not providing benefits to their employees.
So through this ballot measure, we're talking about kind of setting a floor that the corporations have to pay at least this much toward health care. And that would, in order to pay for those corporations that aren't doing that, we're having to pay extra taxes into different programs to make up for those corporations right now.
That's right. And what they found in Washington State, where they could get the data from the Department of Human Services, that a high percentage of Walmart employees are accessing are in their equivalent of the Oregon Health Plan. So what you have are employees at Walmart who don't provide, an employer who does not provide health care, their employees are going to get health care one way or the other. They're going to go to the doctor and not pay their bill, which we would have to pay as our insurance rates increase, or they're going to access whatever state plan is available, which we'll fund with our tax dollars. So Oregonians will pay for the unfunded folks, those folks who don't have health benefits, one way or another.
Tom, did you know that actually $1,128 of our family premiums go to pay for the uninsured?
Wow, right, that's almost
right now. That's not even the taxes that we pay to fund public health programs.
That is amazing. That's $100 a month of our premiums that go to pay for the uninsured.
Right.
And I just want to be clear about that one company you mentioned, Walmart. This is like the biggest biggest company in the world with, you know, three out of the five richest people in the world are from the family that founded Walmart, right?
That's right.
Okay. And they can't afford to pay health insurance for their employees, I guess.
Well, what they're trying to do is say, yes, we'll provide health insurance, but what they want to do is give, and I heard your previous guest talking about the Bush plan with the health care savings account, what they're saying to their employees, well, you can have this type of health care benefit, but unless you have the money to fund that, you're not going to take advantage of it. So it's a smoke and mirrors argument.
And so what happens if a corporation or a company does not pay that at least 9% of payroll?
What they do, what would occur is that the company that did not pay their fair share of their health benefits would have to pay 9% of payroll into the Oregon Health Plan, which the majority of Walmart members are already at.
Huh.
You still there, Tom?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, great. Hey, I want to just take a break and let the callers know if they want to call in and ask, make a comment or give, a question to Tom Chamberlain or either the two of us. They should call in to 503-231-8187. And we're here at KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. Tom, so before we talk about any other ballot measures, we need to be real and talk to the Oregon workers that are in unions. And we all need to own up to the fact that we've all been struggling around this issue. And even where we do still have health care coverage for our membership, almost every plan in the state over the last 6 or 8 years has taken some benefit reductions. We're not nearly in as good a shape as we were 6 or 8 years ago.
No, not at all. And, in fact, I believe that workers of working Oregonians are starting to connect the dots, and they understand that those folks who don't have health care have a direct impact on them, impact on their plan. And not only is it a right thing to do to provide everyone health care, but it also isn't financially, it impacts all of us.
And for us in AFSCME, I know that it's the costs in the rural areas are much, much higher because of the lack of competition of hospitals and such. And, it's the what our members have to pay out in some of the rural areas for their family health coverage is awful. And we organized a hospital in Hermiston a couple years ago, kitchen worker only making $9 an hour, and this hospital was going to charge him about $300 a month for family coverage, and he couldn't afford it.
Absolutely.
And that's what we're really living with. I mean, a health care facility, a hospital, couldn't provide their employees with family coverage.
And I think there's I think a lot of folks, a lot of employers are going down the wrong track. They're increasing deductibles, they're reducing benefits, and not only are they doing it because of the cost increase that they're experiencing, but they're also doing it because they believe that if they make the consumer feel the pain, they're going to use less benefits. And I think wiser heads are saying, no, that's not what's going to happen. What's going to happen is people aren't going to go to the doctor when they should. Their conditions are going to be aggravated. And in the long run, it's going to be more expensive, not less expensive.
Well, and the data really bears that out. I mean, if you even just take a look at the people who are kicked off the Oregon Health Plan standard and people who don't have access to health care, it is that they wait longer to get treatment.
Mm-hmm.
They end up in the ER, you know, exacerbating the number one reason for personal bankruptcies in this country, which is unpaid medical bills.
Right.
And so, the question comes to me, although many would say, stop pointing fingers, Mary Beth. I'd like you to point some fingers. I mean, you know, you talk about the hospital, Ken, in Hermiston, not being able to provide affordable health care to their health care workers. Outrageous, that is. And, you know, Ken and I were talking about premium increases at our as employers. We're sitting here also, you know, trying to provide health care for our employees and those increases. And if I call my insurance agent, you know, all I get is, well, no real reason, right? No real justification of why did our premiums go up 14.5% this year. And I'd like to know what you think about that. And, you know, maybe you have ideas on how to hold the insurance companies accountable.
Well, actually, I do. I have an initiative called the Reasonable Health Insurance Rate Act of 2006. And what it does is it creates a PUC-like regulatory board over the healthcare industry. And what it says is, basically, you know, you can increase health insurance rates. You just have to show this board why you're going to do this. So it creates transparency in the system. In states like Maryland that have enacted it, they've seen a reduction in the rate of increases for healthcare. I mean, if we can regulate our utilities, why in the heck can't we regulate the insurance company? And why can't we have a transparent system? I mean, if you're going to increase rates, why are you doing it? Are you doing it because your costs are increased, or is it because you're not making the amount of profit you think you're entitled to? And we should know these things.
Indeed. Sounds like a very interesting concept. And is that ready for a signature collection, or where are you in
that? We've got a ballot title out of the Secretary of State's office. Of course, you know that ballot title can be challenged, and we're in the segment of the process where they're challenging the ballot title.
And have people said that they are going to challenge, or...?
Well, you know how that works. It's you're usually surprised.
You don't know until you know.
Right. Sort of like walking through a minefield one step at a time.
You know, one thing I'd like to see what you both think of, and something I was thinking about last legislative session, and that is, you know, almost every single health plan requires some kind of deductible before your insurance really kicks in. And I'm wondering if we can get the insurance companies to have the plans actually have, you know, that preventative care that Karen was talking about earlier, you know, go towards our deductible so that people, you know, I know that there's a lot of folks who are like, oh, all right, it's going to be $85 for me to go to the doctor. I can't do that this month. And then next month, you know, something else comes up that prevents them from paying that $85. Is that incorporated into your ballot measure at all, or what do you guys think of that?
Well, I think it's a good idea. It's not in either of my ballot measures or the AFL's ballot measures, but it'd be a great idea. I mean, anything we can do to get folks in early to do things like cease smoking, weight control, all those things makes sense. And I think in the long run, you're right, it's going to save us money.
I actually think that's interesting because I was looking at insurance documents today from my insurers about the rate of increase. And on our dental plan, all the preventative stuff is paid at 100%.
Right.
And, I mean, that's interesting that dental insurance companies have made that kind of decision that that's a really good idea. It's going to save money in the long run, but health insurance companies aren't there. So I think that's a good idea that we ought to start working on in some fashion.
Excellent. What else is the AFL up to in terms of health care, Mr. Chamberlain?
Well, we're developing a strategic plan that will take us through not only this election cycle, but what we're trying to do is come up with a strategic plan for the long term. I mean, oftentimes, those of us in the progressive movement, those of us in the labor movement, look at each election cycle independently, then look at the legislative session. Makes sense to me that not only should we have a strategic plan for each election cycle, but tie them together.
Mm-hmm.
If you had a six-year plan, you could get three different election cycles and three different legislative sessions and really tie in what you're trying to accomplish here. I think we missed the boat by not doing that.
I think that's a great idea. And, kind of piggybacking off this national poll that we were talking to our earlier guest, I know we'll do some polling soon, but, if we could get those same kind of numbers, that 84% of Oregonians think that a fundamental health care reform is a necessary item, I think that's something we really use in the 06 elections to say, where are you going to be at on fundamental reform? Because 84% of Oregonians think it's absolutely essential.
I agree.
The interesting thing, too, not that the Center for American Progress, I don't think, asked this question, but it's been asked in other polls, and it's the question around health care as a right.
Mm-hmm.
Very high 80s numbers, and this I can say to Oregon, that statement, should health care be a right, is supported overwhelmingly, 82-84% in urban Oregon, in rural Oregon, in suburban Oregon, across all political demographic lines. So I think that value statement is a pretty important one, because I think everyone is feeling this pinch, right? Whether you're an employer, a family budget, state budgets are squeezed from these high health care costs. So,
Mary Beth, I'm just sitting here to listen to you and everything makes sense. I think, though, what's being left out of the equation is small business, Oregon business.
Mm-hmm.
They need to play. If you're going to be competing on a world market, if you're even going to be competing with the European market, you have to figure out how we do that and have a healthcare system that reduces costs and provides good benefits to our folks.
Well, I will say that I think that the business community has come to that realization
well.
I think when it was, 2% of payroll, nobody was paying attention. But now when it's 10, 12, 18% of payroll, the business community is like, oh, my God, what do we do? And so maybe there's some ways for the AFL and the business community to work together, because this is clearly an issue that reforming the healthcare system and reducing costs will take a big monkey off both of your backs.
And I think one of the most troubling things I saw during the last legislative session was the failure of the House to act to enlarge the pool, the drug purchasing pool, to allow business.
I totally agree with you. It was an outrage.
It is outrageous.
There's a lot of pooling issues that we need to move on in terms of putting all the teachers in one big pool and putting other public employees in one big pool. That's just good common sense. I also want to kind of make a shout out to all the unorganized workers out there that are struggling and having to pretty much unsuccessfully deal with this issue with their employers. The best way to deal with healthcare issues is to have a union, because then you get to negotiate over them every couple years. And, AFSCME, Teamsters, other unions are willing to work with you to get unions in your workplace. So that's the most effective way to help out your cause.
Well said, Ken. Well said. The only thing I would add to that is I don't know of a union out there who doesn't have health care, and those folks who aren't in a union, they're struggling. They're struggling to get health care, whether it is purchasing it outright or trying to get into our Oregon health plan. It's just hard for them.
No doubt. So, Tom, I don't know if you want to hang with us for a little bit or if you've got to go. We thought we might spend some time talking about some of the other ballot measures that are potentially on the ballot this November. Do you want to hang and yak with us about them?
Sure, I can hang and yak for a little bit.
So we want to focus on the other health care ballot measures, and I think my co-host is the expert on this, so take it away.
I don't know about that, but, it really is a great day, and Ken, you referred to it as the perfect storm earlier. And I think we might actually be in that place where I feel very hopeful and as Karen said, optimistic about opportunities that there are, and I think the fact that there is a plethora of health initiatives on the ballot this year speaks to that. A lot of legislators have filed them, and Representative Greenlick and Senator Bates and Senator Westland have filed the Hope for Oregon Families initiative, which basically makes that value statement about health care as a right puts it in the Constitution, and then requires the legislature to come up with a plan at a date certain. Have either of you organizationally taken a position on this measure? And
you know, our organization has just started to look at these ballot measures, and this one, you know, we'll probably take a real close look at. I got to give Senator Westland and Representative Greenlick a lot of credit. You know, when they both got cancer in the last couple of years, they looked at this and, you know, decided health care was the number one issue that needed to be dealt with. That they were lucky to have insurance coverage, but they thought about all those that didn't. So I think we will be taking a position. How about you, Tom?
It'll be on the agenda for our March meeting, I'm hoping. I really like Ben Westland and Representative Greenlick. I mean, they're really putting a lot of time and effort in trying to move something forward.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the Healthy Oregon Plan, which is actually put forth by a doctor who's an AFSCME member and a nurse out at the Virginia Garcia Clinic, that requires the legislature again to establish a framework to achieve universal health coverage in our state, also by a date certain. That's Initiative 111, and I believe they are out on the streets collecting signatures, as is Measure 40. And then we have Initiative 122, which, Tom, you mentioned it earlier, but it would do what the legislature failed to do, which is expand the Oregon prescription drug program to include all uninsured Oregonians. It does not go to including the private sector in the initiative, and I don't know if that was a single subject rule or what that was really all about, but this would expand the drug purchasing pool to all uninsured Oregonians.
I actually think that's probably going to do more for Oregonians than any other health measure out there, save mine, of course.
Of course.
Then we
have the Initiative 143, which is the Family Health and Wellness Act of 2006. This is another measure brought forth by legislators, and it provides health insurance coverage to all children up to age 19 by raising the tobacco tax, I should say actually cigarette tax, by 60 cents a pack. And that would raise, I believe, $142 million that would go to cover all children under the Oregon Health Plan. So that's
I think that's an important initiative. Yeah. You know, before I mentioned the number of new jobs in Oregon and the fact that they're almost all in the service sector, they're paying $9 or $10 an hour and may provide employee coverage, and the family coverage would come at $300 or $400 a month premium, and nobody can afford that on their $9 salary. So the number of children that are uninsured is continuing to increase. I think that's an important initiative that would help, especially lower income Oregonians, working poor.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, and it's interesting too. I don't know if you guys are aware of this, but you know, 2/3 of the uninsured in our state come from a working family. They have at least one full-time worker in the household. And, you know, this goes back to the whole cost reduction aspect so that employers can provide. If we're going to stay within the employer-based system, and we didn't really ask Karen this, but we need to figure out a way for employers to be able to provide comprehensive health insurance for their employees and their employees' families. Then we have the Reasonable Health Insurance Rate Act of 2006. That's the Insurance Rate Review Board that Tom spoke about earlier, Fair Share Health Care. And then we have Governor Kitzhaber, and while he's not going to have a ballot measure, he's been out there talking about really overall overarching reforms. And I'm just curious what you guys think of this idea of pooling all public money, and what that might do to the overall system.
Well, I have some concerns with it. Mainly, we have an employer-driven healthcare system in this country. If you were going to start up anew, maybe you might design something differently, but this is what we have to live with. The problem I have with Governor Kitzhaber's plan is, one, it removes the incentives for employers, tax-wise, to provide health benefits to their employees. That is problematic. Two, it would change how Medicare benefits. I think all those things are problematic. I don't see it getting us to where we need to go. Now, I think part of what he's trying to do is create a crisis within the system to make something happen. That may have to occur.
You know, I talked with the ex-governor last week, and I think what he wants to do is similar to what we did here in Oregon that he led the charge on, and that's create some political tension by getting a very, very, very broad agenda out there and getting support behind it, and then forcing the politicians to deal with the reality of, you know, 84% thinking we need fundamental change.
Mm-hmm.
So I think all of these kind of ballot measures and initiatives that folks are taking are a good thing. I thought it'd also be good for Mary Beth to tell us a little bit about some of the Oregon organizations that are working together on health care issues, progressive organizations, unions. You know, what's out there that people can plug into over the next 3 or 4 years to make this happen? Because that's really what it's all about. How can we make this happen?
Well, thanks, Ken. I'd take this opportunity, of course, to plug my organization, which is Oregonians for Health Security. You can reach us on the web at oregoniansforhealthsecurity.org. Join as a healthcare voter. This is making a statement that is your litmus test issue. And, you know, we can talk about polling, we can talk about ballot measures, but if people don't engage in this fight, we're never going to get it done. And that's where it's so important for people to join in. We are a coalitional organization with other great healthcare advocates like the Oregon Health Action Campaign, AFSCME and SEIU and the AFL, AFT. Those are all coalition partners of ours, including members of the faith community. So this is a table that everyone has been coming around to see what can we do to work together to reduce costs and expand access to health care. The Health Policy Commission, interestingly enough, which is a government entity with gubernatorial appointees, has set up a meeting for this Thursday at the Governor's Hotel from 1 to 4 p.m., and the public is invited. And they have brought together Governor Kitzhaber, Oregon Health Action Campaign, Code Blue Now, Oregonians for Health Security, Oregon Health Action Campaign, and others to tell the Health Policy Commission what all these organizations are doing and how can they, as the Health Policy Commission, play a role in helping to reform the system. So I think that perfect storm that we spoke about earlier is really happening here in Oregon, and we can start the tsunami across the country to build the healthcare constituency that will be needed for reforms statewide and clearly reforms on the national level.
So what about, I guess, you know, the next strategy after any ballot measures in this November would be a legislative package for next session.
Well, and before we get there, Ken, we have to elect a pro-affordable health care legislative body.
Exactly. And I think, you know, the other thing that we're going to be doing in our interviews with all the candidates is saying to them, health care is the number one issue in this state. You know, it is the number one issue that needs to be dealt with. What are you going to do about it? Are you going to sit on your hands, or are you going to do something? Because going through another session where they don't do anything about it and then just put out a bunch of ballot measures isn't going to be productive. So I think, Tom, you're probably going to be stressing that same message.
Absolutely. I mean, you have to.
We clearly will be.
I mean, you can't go through another session like we went through the last session where nothing happened. There were a number of bills filed that addressed pooling, that addressed oversight to the insurance site. Industry, on and on, and nothing happened.
Right. No, it's very, very true. And I think, again, we have a great opportunity. We have Oregonians from Astoria to Kay Falls who are very concerned with this issue. And, you know, even if they themselves have health insurance, they're concerned about their parents and this Medicare Modernization Act thing. They're concerned about their children, their families, their neighbors, and how this lack of health insurance is putting a damper on our economy. So I would just say that if we're sitting here a year from now talking about the legislative session, I am hopeful that we are going to have strong plans and a group of committed legislators who say, yes, we are going to stand up to the powerful drug, insurance, and hospital lobbyists and get the health care that Oregonians need today.
Yeah, I think the other thing we need to do, and Tom, this really speaks to all of us in the labor movement, we need to link up what happens at the bargaining table with politics. And, you know, I think back on the last few years, every strike or near strike that we've had in Oregon AFSCME in the last few years has been related to health care issues. And we need to go back to each of those communities and rally our members to say, okay, legislator, you have a chance now to do something about our issue. And you need to do something because it's our number one issue, needs to be your number one issue.
And also, frankly, I mean, they have to be, you know, these elected officials have to be fiduciarily sound with our money. It is our money, and they have the authority and the power to hold these industries accountable, and they should, because you and I are paying for it, and they need to be held accountable themselves. So whether it's in November or throughout the legislative session, Oregon elected officials need to know that Oregonians care about this issue and want action, and they don't want to wait another 5 years for action.
And what we have to do as a labor movement, and I think Ken, you really touched on it, is we have to use this as an organizing tool, not only for the labor movement, for the progressive movement, folks in the health organizations out there as well, like Mary Beth's group, but we need to get our members at the Capitol.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I when I was working for the governor, I saw many times where those halls were filled. And on the health side, where I did see some participation, I didn't see the volume of folks in the halls like I would have liked to have seen. I think we need to do a better job of getting folks out, getting them motivated, getting them into their legislatures, and really having an impact.
Yeah, I think some of that is our failure to make this link between what happens at the bargaining table and what happens in public policy,
right,
legislative action. Because, you know, if we are not doing our job at both things, then we're falling down. And I gotta admit, you know, I remember 30 years ago circulating my first initiatives for single payer national health care.
Mm-hmm.
And it's 30 years later, we don't have it, and we're, you know, in 10 times worse situation than we were in the 70s.
Right.
You know, we've gone through probably five or six times in this country since then when health insurance premiums were increased in double digit, and we continue to fall behind. So, you know, the perfect storm, I think, is the fact that the premium rate is outrageous. There's fewer and fewer people with coverage, more and more people going to emergency rooms. Hospitals, sometimes because of the cuts to the Oregon Health Plan, are laying off my members that are then uninsured. And, you know, the perfect storm is hitting us right in the face, and it's time to do something about it. And I think these organizations can do that. We're looking forward to you helping lead the charge, Tom.
Well, thanks. I'm going to do my best. I won't let you down.
Excellent. What else?
What else? I got a new webpage. And what we're going to do is use it to educate members on all kinds of issues, not only our members, but just workers of Oregon. So the Oregon AFL has a new webpage, and the easiest way to access that at webpage is just do a search for the Oregon AFL-CIO. Take you right there. We'll have updated information on all the initiatives, and during the legislative session, we'll also keep folks educated on what's going on. And it's also a good way to keep track of where workers can get involved with different campaigns and different issues.
Excellent.
So you mentioned your March meeting will be the meeting where the AFL takes positions on ballot measures, you think?
Yes.
So people that are interested in that could check out the webpage after March and see what their unions are thinking about these various ballot measures.
Absolutely. And candidates as well.
Great.
Excellent.
Okay.
So I want to thank you, Tom, for being our guest.
Thank you.
You hung with us and yakked with us for a long time, and I appreciate that.
Oh, well, thanks for the time, and you both. Everybody have a good evening.
You
thank
too.
You.
Okay,
talk
bye-bye.
To you soon.
Bye.
So we started off the program saying healthcare, 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 Mary Beth, and I think those of us who are serious about it need to almost get a single-minded focus right now, or else we're not going to accomplish what we need to do. And I like the fact that there's so much action and so many organizations in Oregon working on it. I think we can pull together, and we may not always have agreement on the exact, precise things in each plan, but if we can get some consensus around major goals like the ones Karen laid out earlier, I think we can make some progress.
I absolutely agree, and I think the voice of working people and the voice of the AFL-CIO and its affiliated unions is very, very important, because you all know this issue really, really well. From the bargaining standpoint, you've seen the costs increase, and that's coming out of workers' pockets, right? It's not just that they're getting 5% wage increases and fully paid health care. Health care is replacing wages in many, many communities across the state. So let's solve the health care issue together, and we're going to be able to increase the standard of living for all Oregonians.
That's really true. You know, it's been a cost shift in three directions. Workers are having to give up wage increases to pay for part of their health insurance. Many workers are having to pay a monthly premium for their health insurance, and almost every plan has got higher deductibles or higher copays now. So, you know, every working person is having to pay for this a few different ways. And I think it's time to deal with this crisis and call it what it is, a crisis, and admit that we haven't done the greatest job on it and forge ahead. I really look forward to working with any number of folks on this issue.
I agree, and if I could, I would just say, you know, any folks interested in healthcare reform, and getting involved in 2006-2007, please go to www.oregoniansforhealthsecurity.org.
So you've been listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, and we just want to let you know a couple other of our sponsors.
Possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from SEIU Local 503 OPEU, whose mission is to improve the quality of life through worker empowerment and a progressive labor movement, and whose members deliver quality public services to Oregonians every day. And also by AFSCME Local 3336, representing the employees of Oregon's Department of Environmental Quality by advocating for working conditions, pay and benefits, supporting political activity that promotes pro-environment and pro-labor positions, strengthening labor coalitions, and actively organizing members. More information at AFSCME3336.org.